This show is brought to you by Helix Sleep. For a custom mattress at the fraction of the cost, go to helixsleep.com/Joey right now, and you're going to get $50 off of your order. That's helixsleep.com/Joey to get $50 off of a custom mattress made just for you that you buy at helixsleep.com/Joey. Show is also brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10%. On all of their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, ShroomTech Immune, and ShroomTech Sport.
Jesus. Jesus fucking Christ. We're back, bitches, with one of the greatest songs of all time. Church of what's happening now. Sunday, September 11th. Respect. You don't want to know.
Nobody will.
Are you fucking kidding me? They'll never let you know. When you ask the reasons why,
they just tell you that.
Here we go. Here we go, cocksuckers.
Fill your head all full of lies.
That's too deep. Turn that thing off. Cut that fucking thing. That's too deep. I just saw myself playing basketball in 1977 and shit with skinny legs. What's going on, Lee Syatt?
I never had skinny legs. It was fucked up.
What's going on? Don't worry about your fucking legs. What's going on?
What's going on? I had a good week. I went to with you to the show. I love going to comedy shows, man. I was thinking about it today. I've been going to comedy shows. I was one of the nerds. My mom, you're going to Gotham in a couple weeks. My mom, when I was 16, 17, took my brother and I. We went to Gotham. There's something. Even before I knew anything about comedy or knew anything about going, it just, to me, it blows anything out of the water. Sports, you can't really see. If it's a good movie, that's maybe on par, but a good comedy show, I fucking love going.
Do you wait, anticipate for laughter or for the guy to fucking die a slow death?
Oh, I've never wanted a guy to die a slow death. I always go
anticipation, laughter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, and it got to a point like John Panette a few years ago. He passed away, or a couple years ago. My whole family and my family's best friend family, like all the parents and stuff got along. We watched it. We went on New Year's Eve. I must have been 15, 16. We went and saw John Panette as like a family for New Year's Eve.
See, I was more of a music guy at that age. Like, I liked live entertainment. But I liked music, and I liked music at a big scale, but then again, I liked music at a small scale. Like, bands would rehearse at my mom's bar when
really?
I was a kid in the daytime. Spanish bands, whatever. There was one particular band that always rehearsed at my mom's bar in the daytime in the back from, like, 11 to 12 in the summertime. Like, six Puerto Rican kids in the neighborhood. And I still remember one of their songs, but I liked how they could just blend together. Like, that always fucked with my head. Like, how do these guys blend together?
Like, as a band.
Bong kills me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That bong fucking kills me. I just want people to know, yeah, I do 22 bong hits when I come to the office. That's why I don't have it at the house.
Whew.
Tonight I'll have a hard time breathing.
Do you really after the bong?
Huh?
After you smoke from a bong?
Yeah, for some reason I get shit cooking. I don't smoke from a bong that much. Only 2 days a week. It's different. I told you. Once you smoke from a bong a lot, you fucking...
I think my favorite's a joint. You haven't really been doing... I was thinking about that the other day. You haven't really been smoking joints recently.
I'll tell you what. I smoke a joint at night.
Oh, okay.
I brought a big fucking monster to put me down. And like I said, I've been talking about it. The time's come for me to take a breather. I'm just killing myself to live at this point, the lungage. But you were talking about something before we started the fucking show about reefer. That now you only work on reefer. What are you talking about?
It's weird. Like, when we first started, you always make fun of me. Like, there's a... I always used to like pass out, and sometimes I still do, but it's gotten to the point now where for the past, what is it, almost 3 years that I've been doing this full time, I only work. Like, people sometimes, like, I read an article once, like, ooh, employers now are letting more people smoke a joint at lunch or something because they say it helps productivity or whatever. Sometimes, like, ooh, I remember getting drunk at, like, a Christmas party. And now every time I work, 99% of the time, I'm, like, blasted beyond anyone else's, like, conception of how, like, high they can get a marijuana.
Yeah, we started to talk about this last week.
Yeah.
You just become... adapt to the fucking situation after a while. Like, you have to force it that if you're not high, you feel fucked up. Like, when I was shooting the longest shot, I was talking to a chick, and she goes, wait till you stop smoking. And that's when everything comes into perspective, you know?
What do you mean?
Like, when you stop smoking, that's when you... Like, when I got locked up, that little time there, I didn't smoke. Up to that time, I smoked to the minute before I got sentenced. It's always been involved in my life, marijuana. Not for medical reasons, because I was a fucking nut. But I went on a tear. You know, like I've always said, everybody raves about Colorado now. I lived in Colorado then, and the weed was still tremendous compared to anywhere else I was getting. Well, I wasn't traveling as much, but when I did travel, I had different spots I went to. So... I smoked out of a bong then. In Colorado, 90% of the people smoke out of a bong. They put snow in the bong, ice cubes in the bong, or, you know, so club soda with ice cubes. It's fucking crazy. So that's where I got the lung thing from. All those years living at high altitude, smoking a fucking bong.
I have terrible lungs. I don't know what it is.
Oh, no. Give me a fucking month. Your lungs will be fucking so stretched out, you won't know what hit you. Let me tell you what happened yesterday. Guys... first off, right now, EBI is on, and I want to thank Eddie Bravo. It's on Fight Pass. If you're a member of Fight Pass, I'm going to watch it tonight when I get home. I feel fucking very saddened that I'm not there. I told Eddie if we got out of here early, we would shoot over there, and that's it. It's not that I don't love Eddie or I'm trying to bang heads with Eddie or nothing like that. I'm leaving Thursday. I have a lot of things to do tomorrow. Lee has a couple things to do tomorrow. I'm busy as shit, and I just have to do the podcast tonight. I'd rather do it tonight so people have it early Monday morning. So, bing, bang, boom, your fucking day starts with some conversation here. It's really weird. Lately, I found myself in a predicament that I haven't had since I was a criminal.
What's that?
I'm busy. I'm busy. I cannot believe what is on my plate. I really can't believe it. And when you look at it from the outsider eye, you're like, okay, you have those three things on your plate. No, it takes 35 minutes to get warmed up in front of the computer to write these things.
Oh, okay.
And as you're writing, you're getting new ideas, and you're writing those down, and you're writing, and you're writing, and you're writing. So it's frustrating, because guess what, Luis Ayad? I'm not a writer. I'm learning as I go.
And so there's a bigger learning curve. So, like, what are you – so do you want to break down the three things that you're writing? Like,
I'm trying to write this book.
Okay.
Which – is great to write, but painful at the same time. It's like bittersweet. Every time I spit a line in there, I love it, but it's like bittersweet because I'm scratching a scab. And right now, I'm in a real scabby fucking area, let's just say. The special, you know, I listened to my set Friday night, and it was good. It wasn't what I wanted, not by any means, but it's a style that I like and I admire. If you do it a lot, you'll bomb 90% of the fucking time. I just got lucky that night. The right words came out of my mouth. Saturday's set was a little sloppier, and I came home a little frustrated last night. So last night, like, I wrote some stuff out, and I couldn't believe that. At one point, it was 10:30, and the next minute was 1:30.
Damn.
You know? And I put the fucking 1:30. I was like, what? You know, just from scratching and listening to the set from Tuesday night at the fucking Dark Horse. And, you know, those sets, you talk for a half hour, you get one line. But to me, that one line goes on a page that I could refer back to and go, Jesus, that made me giggle. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever. But for the first time in a long time, Lee, and I'm telling you this, that I'm a good organizer. That's one of my strong peeves. I could look at my day and go, okay, this is how I have to chop it up. You know what? This puzzle don't fucking fit here. and it's just going to fuck up my day. Let me move this to Wednesday. I'm one of those guys. I'm giving you enough window. I know about the 405. I know about the 101 North at 2:30 or 11:30. I'm busy right now.
Right.
It's the weirdest fucking thing. I got myself into a little bit of a fucking pickle. And it's the day's coming. And I know this. And you have to keep a podcast going. You have to. There's so many things. I'm one of those people that is raised to sit there. And while everybody else is giggling, you know, I wasn't raised to take a vacation. You know, I question vacations. A lot of people would agree or disagree with me. I'm the type of guy that I'm sitting there and I make a deal with myself. And that's great with the TV. Like today, I watched the Giants and the Cowboys. I called you while I was watching. I wanted to see what you were watching, what was going on with New England. I didn't know New England was playing tonight. You know, I like football.
Right.
But I don't know all the movable players. You know what the best game in this country is? College football.
Really?
Yeah. If you really get to know college football, the top 10, you really watch the purity of a game. You really learn the purity of the game.
Oh, right. Okay.
There's only one thing with college football, that the players move every 2 or 3 years. So every 2 or 3 years, you have to be involved
and know about these players. Yeah.
When you get drafted by the NFL, you play with the fucking Houston Texans for 10 years of your career. I get to know who you are. Do you understand me? I get to know the team and the positions. Excuse me.
But yeah, the older, the more, like I used to watch SportsCenter. I haven't turned on SportsCenter in years.
So I revolved around sports. And something happened like in 1987, I remember. It was the World Series. And I'm like, this is the first time I'm not involved in the World Series. And I think it was the Twins were playing the World Series. And I had to be like 24, 25 years old. That was the first time I got de-virginized from sports. That first fucking World Series. But to get back to this, it's very weird when you have a gun to your head. You know, I have to maintain my relationship at home. You know, I have to be there in the morning with her. I have to be there when she comes home. I need the dinners with her. That's always been important to me. But my work is also important to me. You know, like what I do is important to me. Let's be honest. My social life sucks dick. Because the antisocial shit has come up by tremendous fucking means. You know, just come up. Just, I don't know what it is.
Is it antisocial or I just think you don't really like going?
If I go to a bar, if I go to a fucking game right now in this point in my life, more than ever do I think to myself, what the fuck? I should be doing something. Like today, I was watching a football game. I watched it for 30 minutes and I fucking got up and went and I wrote for fucking an hour. I listened to the tapes. I wrote. I made adjustments. I scratched this. That shit that I have to do.
Right.
You know, this morning I got up. Got up late today. I got up like at 8:30.
Okay.
Which is late for me. I got up. My wife, boom, boom. We talked. We hung out. I drank coffee with them. I made a protein shake for breakfast. They left. I had 30 minutes apiece. I sent a few emails. I made a few calls long distance. And bam, I fucking put my little fucking jiu-jitsu suit on and went over there. I lifted. I stretched. You know, I put some blood in my back. I said, fuck it. I'll go in there and do this and this and this and this. And I did it. And I got up and fuck because I want to be ready for tomorrow. I want to be able to go tomorrow. Because with me, it's just numbers. I'm not going there to be Johnny fucking tough. I'm going there just for the numbers because I know the more reps I do, the better I'll get. The more stamina and the better, you know, the breathing and stuff.
You were talking about organizing. My issue with when I get busy, and you've talked with me about it, is focus. I focus way too far ahead. I focus on what, like a design for a name, or I focus on the name of a company rather than focusing on working on, like I always daydream or fantasize about like how fun it's going to be, how successful it's going to be. And then like, I kind of just skip the actual work part of it. Yeah.
The gut part of it, which 55% of the people I've met out here, you know, one in particular, and I saw it back then. I saw it in 98. In 98, in my fucking job jumping here, I would work telemarketing jobs just to fucking keep busy so I wasn't thinking about comedy all fucking day. And I had a steady check coming in beside the goddamn $15 sets at the comedy store and the 50 bucks I would get from Willie or Jeff Garcia or Felipe or whatever to do their little rooms and shit. I would work with different telemarketing people. And telemarketing people, when an account dries up, they go to different firms. So I was selling cigars, but the company I worked for decided they were just going to open up a cigar store and do the calls from there, and they were going to change it all around. there was not going to be an early morning shift anymore. So I said, I got to find something else to sell. So I went and sold venture capital. What is that when you just invest money?
Yeah, VC, venture capital.
Venture capital people, because these people had this idea of a TV show, okay? But the TV show was going to get written by this fucking writer who had written on this other TV show that was successful on Disney for 12 seasons, blah, 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 blah. These are the characters, and this is what the show's about. Not only are we doing that, and this is when I saw it from an outsider's point of view, they were also selling the merchandise rights
to the show.
So they were going
to
have a guitar, a drums, posters, lights. Right there, I knew it was a disaster. Because you're not focusing. They had one page about the storyline and 82 pages about the marketing they were going to do for the fucking... right there, I learned that. I learned it right there. Like, nobody taught it to me. I saw it. I saw how people, how far ahead of the game people get.
Yeah, it's easy to do. It's fun.
And no, it's not fun.
It's not fun when it comes at...
There's a difference. Like, right now, I'm visualizing my special. That's one thing, but I'm not visualizing a Madison Square Garden with fucking Jay-Z jumping up and down.
No, but it'd be like if you were visualizing the special but not going out this month.
Right. Something like that.
Like, that's what I get fucked up with.
Yeah, no. But when you want to sell those type of things, sometimes people get ahead of themselves. Well, think of the movie rights. And right there I know, because you look worried about money. Right there, when you tell me that you're going to get this and get the movie rights and think of all the hats we could sell at the premiere at $22.50 a hat, right there, I know you have nothing. And the people around you are cheerleading that. So instead of worrying about, like I told you years ago, a guy approached me about a fucking cop in New York that loved martial arts, so he wore a karate uniform everywhere, a kung fu suit everywhere. The fucking script, Lee, was horrendously bad. Everything about it was bad. But the main thing that pissed me off, I didn't mind going to the pitch, was they wanted me to walk in there with the fucking kung fu suit on. They sent the tailor to my house. I refused to let the fucking guys, like, I just...
You didn't want to wear the kimono or whatever it's called?
Fuck no.
Why not?
Because I had to walk out of there with the fucking kimono on, and I knew the pitch was going to be terrifying. I knew they were going to look at me and say, well, thank you. That's a great idea. Let me think about it, and I'll get back to you guys now. With that failure, I got to walk out with that fucking suit on and walk to my car like an asshole and see the valet. That's why. Last night, I fucking go out. And again, for college football reasons, the same reason why I don't watch that many. I can't follow college football because of all the movable fucking parts. Sometimes the UFC gets confusing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 5 years ago, the UFC wasn't confusing. But now, to me, it's very confusing with the UFC Fight Pass and this fight is on here and this fight is on there. So I wait to see what's coming on. Do I know all the fighters on the card anymore, Lee? Not really. You know, I don't see Brendan Vera. I don't see all those. You know, those are the guys, Phil Davis, that I started watching the UFC with. They're all gone. Now there's North Sage Cut. There's all these fucking kids, Jimmy Rivera. I knew Jimmy Rivera had a great shot against.
Oh, yeah, he had a great fight.
Uriah Faber. Yeah, I had read about him a few weeks ago, but I know, believe it or not, Lee, I know nothing about this CM Punk kid. And not till they did the documentary about him did I even know what CM Punk looked like.
I think he's very, at least for me, I wasn't a wrestling fan at all. They kept him very under wraps until they started. Like, I didn't even get to see it. They had like a 6 or 7 part documentary series on him before the fight. But as, at least for me, as the fight was leading up, the only thing I heard was negative. Like, the only thing I heard was like, oh, he's gonna get beat up.
I didn't know anything about him. I didn't watch any of the documentaries. Every time it was on, there was some type of comment on Twitter. He couldn't punch. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. Okay. So, I don't even look him up. I don't know nothing. Guys, I have so much on my fucking plate that sometimes I'm interested about something, but I don't even open the door because I know I'm going to read. I'm going to have to get. It's like when you're reading a good book. You get intrigued by it, and you won't put it down, and you have other things to fucking do. So, that's why the computer is deadly.
Oh, it is.
The computer is deadly. When you're trying to do something, you got to just shut it down. Just close the fucking thing because you won't get no work done. Because every 8 minutes, your eyes stare over there. So, I get home last night. Again, I'm bombing, and I want to listen to the tape. I want to listen to the one from Friday, and I'm listening to all this shit last night. And at the same time, you get bored after 12 minutes. You put the earphones on, and you click. And I think I click onto Yahoo page, and they're torturing CW Punk.
CM Punk.
CM Punk, whatever his fucking name is. I click to another page, and it's endless CM Punk fucking tearing into it. And now I get intrigued. I go, how bad could it fucking be? I'm not going to get the fight to watch it. I just wait till some fucking dude
post the link, yeah.
Post it on. And sure enough, 10 seconds after I said that, bing, a link comes up with the fucking fight, and he looks horrendously bad. And I look at him, Lee, on the floor, and I click it out, and I leave the room for some reason to smoke a joint or something. I come back, I open up the computer again, I get my notebook out, and there again is more CW, whatever his fucking name is, Punk. And I, for 1 minute there, I go, Jesus Christ. CW Punk doesn't matter in your life this much. Like, there was just so much hatred about this guy. And at the end of the day, the way I looked at it was, from what I heard, he gave up wrestling.
What do you mean?
What, did he give up wrestling? Like, whatever.
Oh, yeah. He's not fighting. He's not wrestling
was
anymore.
Was he rich? Like, was he rich?
He was, from what I've heard from, like, Steve Simone, and he was, like, one of the top in the WWE. And I think, don't quote me on this, there might have been, like, a contract dispute or something to that sort. And then at that point, like, he was going to come back, maybe not come back. And then that was 2 years ago when he joined the UFC.
Okay. So he went, he started training somewhere at Duke Rufus.
Yeah.
Which is a hard academy, and you'll learn a lot. It's a lot to get absorbed. And they got the guy a UFC fight. Now, in my world, you know what, man? He was fucking delusional. You know, he was a little bit on the delusional side. I know, just as a fucking comedian, that if you're going to fight, you have to be doing it for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to have a couple of fights in the competition level, then a couple of fights. You know, it just takes a couple of things. Things that the record's never going to come up. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's never going to come up. You went to a competition one time, and when you go to those competitions, the regular karate ones, you fight like three times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you fight like three-minute rounds or something until the winner gets decided. It's not full contact, but just that semi-contact, Lee,
mm-hmm,
teaches you how to move your hands, what to block for. Those karate kicks are slick. They fake to your fucking stomach, and they pop up to your fucking face. You can't touch the face, but you can touch the body. And from there, you move on to a few jiu-jitsu tournaments. And then from there, you do a couple MMA things, right? This would be what I think would be the obvious fucking pattern. This is what I'm just assuming.
Yeah.
Okay, and after you go 8-0 in the MMA lower division, you know, fights in Tarzana on Saturday night in the back of a church, that type of shit, you get $52 and your trainer gets $11. After eight of those, you send a tape to Joe Avila, whatever his fucking name is, the guy who got fired from the UFC. And they decide yes or no, or they hear about you in the low, something, you know. So when I didn't see, for me, in my world, I really didn't know. In my world, it could have been that CM Punk was a wrestler, but maybe in high school he boxed. Maybe in college he fucking
did something.
Was an NCAA champion wrestler. I didn't know what the fucking particulars were. But then I find out this guy's got no credentials whatsoever. That's what you're trying to tell me. Like, no credentials. You went from professional wrestling right into this fucking thing.
That's what, yes.
Okay, and then he goes in the ring, and he gets fucking demolished, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, you asked earlier, anything you heard about him? I forgot. About maybe 3 to 6 months ago, there were articles going around that I read that he had lost, like, 15 out of 16 fights that they had brought in for him in the gym, like secret fights. So that's when I heard, like, the negativity first started hearing. Because I don't really go on boards, and obviously I'm not in the world, so I don't know anything. But that, like, I heard he lost 15 out of 16, like, pre-fight. Because I was wondering why they didn't do that with him. And they probably just can't, because he's so famous and popular. People would go for his knees, or maybe they don't want people to see him losing, or who knows.
You know, man, at the end, CM Punk raised his hand, and they agreed to let him fight. Now, in my world, where I'm coming from, I think it's a business move, correct?
Yeah, probably at some point.
It's a business move because there's no way Lee Syatt wakes up tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in the morning and he calls me. He goes, "Hey, cocksucker, this week I'm calling you, but I got bad news. I'm quitting. I'm going over to Searson kickboxing at 10 o'clock. I'm going to start kickboxing. And then at 2 o'clock, I'm going to see Justin Fortune. And I'm going to become an MMA fighter. And I'm going to the 6:30 jiu-jitsu class at Alberto Crane." And I'll be sitting there going, "Lee, what the fuck are you talking about?" And all of a sudden, a year from now, you call me up and you go, "Hey, what are you doing Friday night? Can you come and corner me?" Corner you? You know, "Yeah, I want to box this dude up in fucking Tarzana." You know, that's the evolution, Lee. But if you come to me tomorrow and go, "In 2 years, I'm going to have my first fight," I don't know where they're going to give it to you. But let's pretend you call Rogan. Rogan goes, "Yeah, I'll talk to Dana and we'll put you in the fucking UFC." It's not that simple. It was because you showed up with an envelope and the UFC knew it and they took a chance.
Well, to me, it seems the only, even aside from CM Punk, it seems like the UFC and the WWE must be doing some sort of deal because they're using CM Punk, which the WWE must own some part of the name. You can't call yourself your wrestling name in the UFC, which is kind of weird. But it's a lot of people are saying it's unfair, and I guess it is, but at a certain point you have to understand, like you said, the UFC is a business. So there's no, this isn't like a state run UFC, like a fight league. This is a business who can do whatever they want. And but I, like the one thing I got from him, and I just feel terrible, he just seems so lonely. When I was watching that, like the embedded or whatever, he was just in his house. Like he's getting all this hate online, and I personally felt like his speech at the end was a little bit corny. Like it just seemed a little bit out of place at the UFC, but it had a nice message. And I just felt like, I feel like he's a nice guy, and he's just getting just shit on like constantly.
You know, I sat there last night. Here I am, a little on the stone side, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what, man? At the end of the day, would Joe Diaz have done it? Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck no.
Fuck you. I would have had an anxiety attack walking to that octagon that my head would have blown up. Even if I would have trained for 2 years, even if I lost 15 out of 6 or whatever the fuck it was, I would have had the anxiety that I would die. I would die. I could have dealt with the 15 in the fucking octagon. I would have lost the first 3, and then at least the next 3 fights, I could throw a punch. I would have got a fucking a sweep. I would have got a hip escape, you know, back to my guard. I could do those simple fucking things, but I wasn't gonna. And then maybe the 9th fight, I knocked him down and I got on top of him, and the time ran out. You know, so I did a little fucking well. You know, I wouldn't have been ready for the UFC. I would have fucking had a nervous breakdown. So, in my mind, all I wanted to say on Twitter was, I didn't know who he was. You know, he looked like a fucking dork to me every time I saw him. I mean, it's not like he came in looking like Brock Lesnar all yoked and shit.
No.
You know, you could see the steroids wore off. You know, you could see that. It doesn't take a fucking genius. And he went in there. He got beat up like that. People were like, he looked like an asshole in front of 11 million people. I got to tell you something. To me, he looked like a guy with balls. I wouldn't have done that.
Hell no, I wouldn't have done it either. But
I don't like how people say he was delusional. He raised his hand. Maybe he was delusional, but somebody should have said, "Sit down, DM. Let me talk to you about something." Listen, things are bad. Those guys hit really fucking hard. You were in professional wrestling. They don't do dick in there like what they do in the UFC. They body slam you. Those punches to the fucking head,
right?
You'll hear rings later on. You'll think that somebody grabbed you by the head and they tapped. That's how fucking hard those punches are to your fucking head. I think, but nobody did that. They said, "You want to fight? It's a good idea. We'll get you a fight. Train for 2 years and let them know when you're ready." It's not the guy's fault, man. It's like a fight tomorrow. Call Madison Square Garden and go, "You know what? I'm ready to fucking sell Madison Square Garden." They go, "Hold on, Joey. Let's look at the computer." They'll come back and go, "Are you fucking crazy?" But if I get some weird lady and she's like, "We can make money some way. There's some way we can make money with this. or we could build this up to be an event or something like that. It just didn't get built up or anything like that. So it backfired the whole way through. I feel bad for the guy. I would feel really bad if they didn't give him another fight.
I hope they just give him an something, not easy, but just like give him something.
So what weight class is he fighting at?
Let me check. I think it's 170, but I like just put him in another promotion or something for a little bit. That's what I...
How old is he?
CM Punk, he's old. Well, not really, but he's like mid-30s probably. Let me check.
It just, to me, I see sometimes, I think it's balls, and I applaud the guy, whether I like his beliefs, and I don't even know anything about him. I'm just saying, like, that's what I thought of last night when I was stoned to the fucking gills, that this guy had balls. That's it. If somebody took it else as a business venture, this guy had fucking balls. Boom. That's it. People got pissed off at me on Twitter. I woke up this morning with 2,000 angry fucking tweets. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. Matt Mitrione got involved. John Fitt. I'm like, guys, all I said was that fucking at the end of the day, I got to give the guy some credit. I don't care if he got embarrassed in front of 11 million people. Sometimes you gotta get embarrassed.
He had some defense. He didn't just get destroyed. It wasn't like he got knocked out in 3 seconds. He defended a little bit, and he's 37, and he's a middleweight.
Yeah, that's a tough age. Well, God bless him, man. The internet has just become a weird thing. I have a lot of good times on the internet, but I see a lot of dumb shit on the internet. And I gotta be honest with you, I see 70% dumb shit and 30% of shit that matters.
Not even 30 for me, I don't think. Or at least 30 that, like, on social media? Is that what you mean?
Well, you know, like I told you, I said, Lee, Lincoln, then don't stop. They don't stop.
They're not going to stop?
I don't know what I'm going to do. I've never signed a contract, nothing to be with Lincoln, then. They keep sending
someone must put your email in.
Listen, I love my Twitter. I really do. I have fun on my Twitter. I can't be on it all day.
No.
I love my Facebook because I have two sets of completely different friends on my Facebook. You know, I don't take pictures, so I don't like the fucking Instagram that much, taking pictures of me eating lunch and shit like that. I don't know what else is out there. You know, people keep hitting me up with Snapchat. I'm good with Periscope for right now.
It's all videos. You don't need to do Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this stuff. Pictures. So the more you let enter your life, the more it takes away from your life. So the more internet things you're playing on, you know, I go to MyFitnessPal, which takes a couple minutes. They're fucked up. And I go to jujitsujournal.com. I write what I learned, how I did, if I rolled or not, how many times I got the shit knocked out of me. I read all that stuff in there. But besides that, I don't go anything for entertainment. If something happens and I see it on the news or something, or they talk about it on the news as I'm walking by, I will go on Yahoo News locally or nationwide and read what the fuck's going on. But besides that, I don't let myself get caught up in anything. I don't know what an app is. I don't know how to work a fucking app. None of that shit.
It's a huge time suck. And I think that's where a lot of people my age are getting stuck in the daydreaming part, because they go on Facebook and they put up a post. Like there's a thing now on Facebook, like on this day, and I hate it because I was a douchebag. Like, not even, I wasn't mean, but I'm just looking at my statuses and I'm like, God, no wonder I didn't have any friends. Like, they're just terrible. And it's just like, you're like, oh, I'm not letting anything get to me anymore. And all that baloney that's on there is, I just think it's, I think, and it's, you know, what's crazy. I started looking into some Facebook ads for some people. They can send ads to you if you're in a relationship, if you just got a new job, if you just moved, if you just broke up. They can send ads to you based on everything. Everything that you're putting on there, they can send ads to you on now. So
the computer knows what type of stuff you're putting on your page.
Facebook knows, yeah.
Facebook knows, and they attack that.
They have the ability to, yeah. So that means everyone is, yes. So that's why people who have been in relationships for a while are probably getting I get a engagement ring ads now. I've been in a relationship with Paula for over 3 years. So
and they know it.
And I stupidly, I want to get the likes on in a relationship. So now they know. I'm sure you'll get Do you get? You might want to look next time your anniversary with your wife comes up. See if you get like anniversary reminders.
I don't think I put it on there.
Oh, it's not on there? Okay.
No. I gave him as limited information as I could to get the fuck on there.
Yeah, that's
speaking
smart.
Of which, the house. You just said something to me before. You thought I smoked in the house?
I didn't know you smoked. I didn't think. I can smell it a little bit when I go in there. And then I just know you have access to the outside pretty close to your...
What do you smell in the office?
Just when I walk in, I can just smell that it's... I don't think anyone smoked in there, but I can just smell that it's there.
Oh, no, there's a fireplace.
Oh, okay.
So it smells like smoke.
Oh, okay. Then
yeah. It scares the shit out of you. You think something's burning. Lee, I got to tell you something. I want to talk to some people about this. I used to smoke in the house till my wife got pregnant.
Okay.
And I'm old school, Lee. I don't give a fuck whether I got a license or not. I smoke reefer if I got it. If I'm at your house watching a movie, I'm lighting up a fucking joint. That's it.
That's it.
Not going out to the balcony. You know, there was no being cautious when I was growing up. There just wasn't, so it didn't stick with me. As I got older, I realized, yeah, I got to smoke on the balcony. When I go to a hotel, I don't spark in the fucking room. That's like inviting hell on the road. Because it's right in your room.
And you get charged or thrown out?
Well, they charge the room $250. And if somebody complains, security knocks at your fucking door, like in the nice hotels. And you don't need that in your fucking life. What if they throw you out? What if they decide to call a fucking cop? I'm sitting there with three more fucking joints and a lollipop or something. That's control of whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I take the joint. I bring my iPod. And I go for a walk around the fucking city. And I smoke a fucking joint right out in the open. I go to like a little park where they have a memorial for some fucking old man soldier from 1910. Like on a horse or something with a hat. And I'll make believe I'm reading it. And I'll just take a little fucking hit.
Remember, you know where there's going to be a cop or something?
No, I'll look around. If there's a cop, there's a car, right?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, but usually, how many fucking cops do you see on a beat anymore? Unless you're watching a movie from New York. You don't see cops on a beat. Not in L.A., see, not up here.
I would be nervous of like a cop off duty.
When I was with Larry, me and Larry walked to Las Vegas Boulevard and sat under the fucking elevator and just smoked right there.
Oh, God.
And, you know, people were pulling us to us in the cars, asking us what we were doing and shit.
Any answer?
Just sitting out here. Really? What are you doing out here? You smoking? No, because I had the joint cupped in my fucking hand. Well, just because I love to smoke. I have never, since my wife told me she was pregnant, have I ever even considered smoking in that fucking house. I wouldn't just because of the way I was raised. And looking back, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. You know what? There's always, my mom respected me in other ways, but that was one way that I didn't like it.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I smelled marijuana. I didn't like it. I should have never smelled that shit. Because once you smell it in your house, then you smell it out, then your head blows up because people are like, that's marijuana. Have you smelled that before? And you got to lie. No, not really. Meanwhile, you're thinking your mom smokes fucking reefer and her friend smokes reefer, and this is why they go out in the balcony, and this is why you found rolling papers. It really wasn't fucking Louis tobacco. So that's how I found that. I put two and two together, and then I knew what that fucking smell was. Then, yeah, my godfather smoked around me. He told me not to say nothing. Am I mad? It's weird. I'm not mad at my godfather for smoking pot around me, but I'm mad at my mother for smoking pot in the house.
Why?
You know, whenever I smoked with Gabby, we smoked in the car, and we smoked after Chinese food. And I didn't say we smoked. I'm sorry. He smoked. I was a young little boy. But my mother smoked in the fucking house.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back on it, you're disrespecting the fucking house. Just what the whole family thing, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. You know I'm weird about this shit. So that's why I don't want to do it in front of Mercy in the house. I don't want to smell it. I have my pipe hidden in the yard, my lighter. She can't find it even if she fucking wanted to. I hide it right in the fucking barbecue thing.
Okay.
Where you pick it up.
Oh, so it's hidden.
The weed's hidden. Everything's fucking hidden at all times. I don't want her to find it. I don't want her to ask me. And I don't want her to fucking smell it. There's going to be a time she's going to smell it. And then we'll break it down.
Have you thought about what you're going to say?
Not really. Not really. Because who the fuck gives a fuck? It'll probably be 10 years from now. She'll smell it in like 3 or 4 years and ask. Then she'll put it together. She'll read about it. They'll come with her in school with the damn project. By that time, I'm going to have to be going for walks and have cologne on my neck and change my shirt and shit like that because their senses are so fucking unbelievable. She'll ask me, why does your shirt smell like smoke? Yeah. People who don't smoke really fucking smell.
Oh, yeah. It sticks out.
They really fucking smell. And at this point, it's in my pores. It's in my jeans. It's in my fucking T-shirts. It's in my geese. It's in my bags. When I grab the bags, I can smell the fucking weed. I have an essence of reefer around me.
That's what I think I'm smelling in your office.
Yeah, I have an essence of reefer around me. It's in my clothes. I could smell it. Sometimes I go on, you know when I smell it? When I go on the road. And I didn't put weed in the bag, but there's still that smell of it in my fucking clothes. All those clothes have been washed with detergent, fabric softener, you know, the whole fucking thing, the towel and the fucking dryer.
They've just been fumigated with weed smoke for so long?
No, it just goes into your pores. And I think there's nothing really you could fucking do about it. Once it goes into your pores and you sweat it out, and it's not like, I think from us eating it, I think it also has to do with the CBD oil I'm using now.
Okay.
It has to do with, now I'm putting it in my system at a lot of different levels, so.
Ooh, yeah, how's the CBD oil going?
I'm so sorry. I'm very sorry about that. I'm going to be honest with you people at home. I've been doing the CBD oil since we had the guest, Hawaiian Chris, on the show. And I'm going to tell you what I've experienced. Do I still have fucking pains? Yes. But I'm also a 300-pound man going to jiu-jitsu and wrestling with young kids. And sometimes I rush up and get... The bottom line is this. I used to have this chronic knee pain. It's pretty much... The pain is lowered to the minimum. If I twist my leg a little bit, it's lowered to the minimum.
So, like, maybe from like a what to what on a scale of 1 to 10?
I went from an 8 to a 2.
Damn.
The pain in my wrist, I still have it, but the flexibility and the mobility is unbelievable. I hurt my wrist. For you people, you can't see it. It's fucking brown right now. Right, Lee? What color do you see it?
It's like purple. Half your wrist. And it was like only a little bit. It's just a little when I first bit saw it, yeah.
This was an arm bar that got caught maybe 3 weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
And then it hurt my wrist. And, hey, what are you going to do? It doesn't hurt now. I keep putting ice on it. I go to the doctor anyway Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning. So if I could stay alive till then, we're good.
I love that your doctor was at the show on Friday. And he was like, Doc, am I okay?
That's my Cuban doctor. I don't think he's a doctor anymore. I met him about 15 fucking years ago at the Comedy Store. And we became friends. But he had a quality that I knew he couldn't be a good doctor.
What was that?
He always had a different woman with him.
That seems like a good thing. No?
If I'd see him on Friday and Saturday, he had two different women with him.
Fuck.
And he was doing powder, and he was jumping up and down. And, you know, a doctor. Remember, I had the doctor of doctors, and I saw his decline. I saw his decline. A man that I loved very much. He wasn't only my doctor, but I loved him very much. Like, Jesus, my fucking throat tonight. Thank you. He was my doctor. So I became friends with him. Then he became my, you know, even when my mom was alive, he knew things that my mom, he wouldn't tell my mom. You know, okay. What I'm saying?
You confided in him.
Yeah, I confided in him and, you know. Thank you, Lee. Look at you. Lee's fucking producing tonight, turning off microphones and shit. But I confided in him. And then I fucked it up. Because I stepped over the line. I went over there and tried to get I traded him cocaine for steroids.
Fuck. You're from the doctor you had as a family? My family
fucking doctor. After my mom died, I kept in touch with him, and I would go over and get prescriptions from time to time. You know, for my throat and shit, he wouldn't charge me. He'd call the fucking pharmacy for me. And then in 82, well, everybody was shooting liquid steroids, the ones that you shoot with a needle into your arm and stuff. And I had a friend one day that was a dear friend of mine. And we were talking one day, and he spoke about he wanted oral steroids if I could get them. And I thought, I banged my head everywhere, and I couldn't get them. And one day I go, you know what? I got to go down there anyway. Let me ask him. And one day I went down there, and the guy gave me like a half a physical. He wouldn't take blood out. He knew I didn't like needles and shit. And I just asked him. I said, what can you get me? And he goes, what do you want to do? And I told him, and he gave me a prescription of Winstrol V.
Okay.
Winnie V, oral. And I would take them to the pharmacy, and I would sell them to my friend.
That's fuck, like, that's not, like, I'm surprised you're so, like, so about it. Like, that's fucked up. Like, you knew him since you were
a kid. And then I got to the point where I was going over there twice a month to pick up a prescription for Winnie V or Anavar.
Okay.
And the boat, they're just mild steroids.
Okay.
And he'd ship them over to a pharmacy, and I'd go to the pharmacy as whatever, and I'd fucking take them, and I'd sell them to my buddy. Just like that.
That's a lot to do, man.
No, what's there to do?
It seems it's fucked up. It seems like,
see, it's controlled a lot more now.
Oh.
Back then, it wasn't as controlled as it was now. They weren't looking for steroids, mild steroids. Anavar and Winnie V are mild steroids. They're usually given to people after surgery, after a burn, stuff like that, because it builds up the skin, you know.
I think what it is like when you say these kind of things, I think back to my family doctor, and like, until the time I was 18 or something, probably until the time I even left it for college, like, she had like the little pictures up on the wall, and you got stickers as you left, and I can't imagine going to them 6 years later and trying to get a prescription for steroids. It's like, it's just so far out of my realm.
Lee, since how far my memory goes back, he was my doctor.
Fuck.
He was my doctor all the way when I lived on 29th Street. But I don't remember the drama till 205 West 88th Street.
The drama with needles?
With needles. That's when he would come over with the long, you know, like the jackets, the rain jackets. And he would have the little bag with him. And
that's fucking
great.
He would
talk to my mother and the babysitter. And then he would walk in the room and take my temperature. And then he'd say, Coquito, I got to give you a needle. And I'd go, no, no. And he'd go, look at your throat. And he'd work through the steps of me. He was a great guy. That's why I loved him. Because he would get the mirror and show me my throat, then get the stick, and then take the fucking things and put them on my own heart. He was a great doctor.
Right.
He tried everything he'd do to relax me. And then he fucking, you know, tried to con me. He'd go, all right, what do you want to do? You want it in your arm or in your leg? And I go, I don't want it anywhere. He goes, we just had a talk. You were just going to let me do it. And I go, no, let me think about it. And he'd go, okay. And he'd go out of the room. And my mom would offer him if he was hungry or if he wanted a beer, and he would start fucking drinking. And he would do like three fucking cocktails. And then he'd come back in, and then he'd go, so what do we decide? I don't know, give me 10 more minutes. And then he'd go out there and do like a blast of coke with my mom or the babysitter, whoever was in the living room. Then he'd come back Jesus all coked Christ. Up, and him and my mom would come in, like, what the fuck? You ready? My mom would come in, yell, let's do this shit. And I go, no, let me think about it. I'm almost ready. And he would go out and do another blast. And then he'd come in and fucking give me the shot. My ass would be purple because I'd tighten up. I tightened up in those days. So my leg would get tight to resist the needle. Needles would fucking go in you, and then my whole ass cheek would get purple. It was horrifically horrific.
When I used to go to the doctor, my mom would take us for ice cream after.
This guy wouldn't give me no lollipop or nothing. He just talked to me about life and girls and cars and movies. He was that type of doctor. He was a hip fucking doctor, man. And I knew he was always kinky. I just didn't know what he did. You know how I found out what he did? When I got off on coke the first time, I thought about him.
What do you mean you're going to get off on coke?
Because I did coke for a year when I was a kid and nothing ever happened.
Okay. Oh, when you get off. Okay.
And one day I drank alcohol and the coke hit me.
Oh.
It became something else. And then after that, the coke started hitting me every time I drank alcohol.
Okay. Sorry. So then what happened when you went to get off for a year?
When you got off what for a year?
You said you got off coke for a year and you thought of him.
I thought of Dr. Del Valle.
Yeah.
Because I realized the reason why his jaw would move. Whenever he would come into the room, his jaw would move. That's a basic cocaine signal. Like when your jaw, I have 1,000 friends who their fucking jaws go for hours. Whenever his jaws went, and then one day I put it together, I got high and I'm like, oh shit. So all those years, Del Valle was doing fucking coke. So I didn't hit him up until that time. Remember, I got really sick when I was 16, the summer of 79. I got really fucking sick. I got a lung infection. And I got a lung doctor brought in to specialize and stick the scope down my throat and scrape my lung and see what was on there. Before they scraped my lung, I called Del Valle and told him to come to the hospital. I'm like, listen, there's something I got to tell you. You got to get in that fucking emergency room or wherever the fuck it is. When they scrape my lung, you got to hide the results from my mom. He's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, listen, I did crystal THC. And he goes, what the fuck are you talking about? And I go, I did some shit that you snort. And he goes, you know, that's angel dust. That's the first person that ever told me that was angel dust. I was like a fucking naive kid.
At 16 doing it, Jesus Christ.
That summer, we were doing a lot of it. Like that 6 months prior to it. So it was going to be all over my lungs. And he goes, listen, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll look at the report. And if it's on there, I'll figure out how to get it off. But I want you to make me a promise. Don't do that shit no more. And I looked at him and I go, well, I think you do, you know, like we had, and he told me to my, at that time I hadn't done coke. I always knew he was up to something. I just didn't know what, you know?
Oh, okay.
But once I got high, like a year later, I put two and two together and I go, that's what this motherfucker was doing. So now I'm going to break his balls. I never broke his balls about it, to be honest with you. But the first time I asked him for the steroid prescription, he goes, take the prescription, but the next time you come here, you better bring me a present and it better not be aspirin.
Fuck.
So I would show up there and go, let me get another prescription here. I brought you something. And just those 3 or 4 bumps he'd do, I would never do the coke in front of him. I had known him that long. So at that time, those people did not know I was doing coke.
Okay.
I just told them that I had friends who did it. They got really good coke, and this was a present for him for helping him out. I told him that the kid he was giving the steroids to was sending him coke.
Oh. So how would you make money? Would you make money on the deal?
Yeah, I'd go into the city, and I'd get an 8-ball of coke, right, for like $2.50 a fucking eighth, and then I'd throw a gram on it, and I'd get 4.5 grams. So now, what did I pay? $2.50, right?
Right.
And how many grams I got?
4.
So what's that divided into $2.50?
60,
yeah, $60, $62.50.
Yeah, yeah.
$62.50. So in those days, cocaine cost $100 fucking bucks.
Okay.
All right, so I would take the fucking cocaine and bring it to him. He'd do it, lose his fucking mind. He'd give me the prescription. The prescription would cost me $6. I would take it to my friend, he'd give me $200. So it would cost me fucking $75, and I'd make $125 profit.
That's not bad. That's a lot of work, though.
No, it wasn't no work at all.
Well, it's dangerous. It's like
it's a lot. What? Lee, are you fucking crazy?
What do you mean crazy?
What danger? What danger is there? Where is do you encounter the danger?
Buying coke? Transporting coke?
No, Lee. What you just met me 2 days ago? What did you become a fucking a Gentile? I know you watch Narcos?
I know you didn't get caught, but I'm saying you could have.
Lee, this was when you looked so much the part, you lived so much the part, that it was like you felt invisible. It was like you felt invisible. Timmy Holloway's listening to this right now, and next time I have a conversation, he'll tell me about I used to go into the city, and it was like I didn't matter. Sometimes I had 200 on me. Sometimes I had 700 on me. sometimes had 1,200 on me, and I look you as a face, as a man. I never worried one time. Never worried one time. Coming back over that tunnel, I always knew that if you went over the tunnel, don't come back over the tunnel, come back over the bridge. That's math 101. That's math 101. If you take the bus over the fucking tunnel, you take the train uptown and you take the fucking bus over the Lincoln Tunnel now, over the bridge. Vice versa also. You make something out of it so they don't pinch you as a fucking whatever. You always have an excuse for why you went there.
But what if the cop's just having a bad day and it's like, hey, you.
No cop's having a bad day like that.
Really?
No cop. You have a Daily News under your arm. You have a Yoo-hoo. You have a jean jacket. It looks like you fucking belong there. And you're just walking down the street. Inside the jean jacket, there's a flat pocket. If you have a Lee jean jacket or Wrangler, and you could tuck your fucking 12 or 15, 14 grams all the way down to the bottom, and nobody knows nothing.
Oh, my God.
It would be the biggest thrill of your life, you walking down. Now you got to make sure that you don't go into nowhere weird. What are you saying, Joey? Don't stop at a fucking porno hub because they got people that you never know. You take your jacket off, the chick's giving you a lap dance, and next thing you know, she's clipping your 12 grams of coke. So you go from point A to point B. A lot of things can happen when you have that blow in your pocket. That's the danger.
Exactly. That's what I'm scared of.
No, there's nothing's going to happen. The worst thing you and I are going to do, with two fat fucks, we're going to stop at Ray's Pizza and get a slice of pizza and a soda. That's it.
If I had that on me, I wouldn't stop anywhere.
And maybe we won't stop. Maybe we won't stop. We'll just shoot right down. We got to stop and get a hot dog.
Why?
Because we had to go over there for something. We had to go over there for something. So we're not lying.
Can't do that first?
No. Yeah, it depends. If you and I come up the tunnel, yeah, I could stop at the fucking some pizza on 88th Street and shoot up, get the fucking 2 8 balls and shoot over the fucking thing.
Yeah, I'm not stopping at a pizza
place. No,
yeah,
I could look you in the face and tell you that one time was I scared bringing that coke over the tunnel. All right, now you go home, you cut it, you sell a little bit of it. You get a ride from a friend of yours from 78th Street down to 36 in West New York, down to 36 in, where the fuck was his office? 36, it was on that last street between Weehawken and the water. And it was right down there, Park Avenue. You went down to Park Avenue in Union City, you went into the office, there was no receptionist. It was just him. He was the whole show. He had fucked all the receptionists. He knocked them up. God knows what could have happened with Orlando. You went in. You gave him the package. That was it. That was the last of the transaction you did. He called the pharmacy. So now I got back in my buddy's car, and he gave me a ride. By the time I get to the pharmacy, the prescription's ready.
In my head, I'm like, okay, what if the...
I got an ID in my pocket with my name on it, and I take the prescription with my name on it. That's it. It's all legal. The guy I send it to, I grew up with the fucking guy. It's pills. I know for a fact he does blow. I know for a fact that he's got 2 kilos at the house, or maybe an ounce, or maybe a gram. Doesn't matter to me. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take those pills out of that container and put them in a different container. And light that fucking container on fire like if it was a fucking numbers paperwork.
Why?
Now, the felony is that they catch him with that container with your name on it.
Oh, so just burn the container.
Burn the fucking container. And give him a different fucking container. Where's the damage, Lee? There's no damage. Where's Tony Bennett? Put that motherfucker on.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. a somebody who will swear to be true as
we used to do with Lee. Dun, 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 dun.
Who'll leave you?
All right, cut that right there, Lee. I want you to find Frank Sinatra. I want to be around.
Okay.
I'm going to teach you a little lesson and shit. And while we're at it, we need a couple more stars. You know what I'm saying?
A couple more.
We're getting the party started, Lee. It's fucking Monday, September 11th. And we're celebrating by doing a special podcast.
Right.
You know, out of respect. That's the least we could do. I don't want to come on here and have a wine fest or whatever. All I want to do is let them know I acknowledge them. Here you go. There you go. Who should say you like me? These are great. All these need is whipped cream. This is the best flavor I've ever tasted in my life. You know why? Because there's no weed in it. There's like fucking no milligrams in it.
50, yeah.
But that chocolate from Chiba Chew is very good.
It is.
I just saw you go like this, zzz, like two times. Listen to Frank Sinatra's version.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I.
What am I going to do with you? All right, put on James
Ooh.
Brown version.
This is Lost Lime. James Brown? Like you
used to. Oh, Jesus Christ. Uh-oh. Bam, we got two more bags of stars here. This turned into a good fucking party tonight, see? Lee, you and I always get creative.
Hell yeah.
And if I look, I know there's a hit of acid somewhere in this fucking office. You understand me?
Let's hope not.
Who takes care of you like me, Lee, cocksucker? Nobody. Right now, you'd be at home with Paul or somewhere, rubbing your feet, watching bad TV. This is James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
This is amazing. Three completely different, well, Sinatra and whatever it is.
Wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. Somebody who will swear to be true, like you used to do with me.
That's fucking amazing. A black dude that's tremendous and two crooners singing the same fucking song with two different twists on it. This is the shit that makes my dick hard because it just goes to show you could fucking cook spaghetti 50 different ways. You know what I'm saying, Lee?
I feel like Paul made me spaghetti carbonara last night.
What was in it?
It's like the one with a little bit of bacon in it and then like a little bit of just butter and egg. And she just like,
with an egg yolk?
Yeah.
Or the whole egg?
I don't know. She
and
made
it. And then you put Parmesan cheese on that motherfucker. Yeah. Fuck yeah. I used to eat that all the time.
She made it for me. She learned how to make it in Italy. It's fucking great.
Italy. Look at you. She brought back recipes from Italy. Right? Thank hell yeah. Fucking lucky. She couldn't bring you back a fucking salad. Huh? It's got to be pasta with an egg, butter, more butter.
No, but we did. She only made one. Like, we only had one bowl. We didn't get crazy.
Did you use spray butter? Right?
No.
For God's sake, I hope you didn't use spray butter. You're getting worse and worse at this shit.
She made it. She wouldn't use spray butter. She all thinks right. The same way.
Good. Does she take and throw in the garbage?
Nah, she doesn't go to that level yet.
Well, that's don't ever have me over you. It's the first time you go to the bathroom. I'll throw that fucking thing out. I wanted to tear when I was a kid. I started throwing away people's ashtrays.
Why?
Because I hated them. I hated ashtrays. So when people weren't looking, I'd throw their fucking ashtrays away.
Why didn't you like ashtrays?
My friend George. Okay. I threw all his ashtrays away when he lived with me in Boulder.
And what would he say?
I'd ask him he was crazy. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Why would I take your ashtray? I don't smoke pot. I only smoke pot. I smoke it outside. He wouldn't know why. I love fucking with people. Sometimes you gotta take the ashtray. Sometimes you always ask me about drugs late at night. Like one night, Lee called and we had a 2-hour conversation about a drug network. like Lee was asking me about my friend who sells coke. And I was telling Lee that I've known these guys in Hollywood that I've been selling. I've known them since 97. I met them through a white Jewish dude named White Lightning. And White Lightning used to sell weed, used to date a black chick that used to fuck the same coke dealer. And he didn't know it. He thought they were just friends. He was fucking it. And she had a kid. And he was half, she was half Jamaican. And he was this Jewish dude that you could just take money from him. At the time, Josh Wolf had an apartment in his building. And he would be very paranoid about hiding his weed in his apartment. So he would hide in the parking garage and we would steal it once a month. Then when he caught on, he started hiding in some girl's apartment. He'd have 3-4 pounds at a time. Because that's what he does. He's a promoter slash weed dealer. So if you want to buy the good weed, you got to go to the parties and pay 20 to get in and buy his fucking weed. It was a great scam he had going on. What was I talking about?
Well, stealing Josh Wolf's weed.
No, we're talking about a drug thing.
Oh, yeah, the people who you met, your drug dealer in Hollywood.
So I met this kid, and I went over there a few times. The coke was good. You know, at this time, I didn't want to go to the store and buy it all the time. You know, when you're a fucking junkie, you got to have a different couple different outlets. Nobody catches on to what you're doing. So I had El Compadre. I had the Comedy Store. And I met this guy, and he goes, he'd get good coke. So he introduced me to this kid, and I would go over there. It was walking distance from my house, which is perfect in Hollywood. And I would walk over there and buy coke from him. It was him and a white dude at the time. And I would go over there and say hello, and they were playing those games. They would play those stupid video games with the cord and shit, and the fucking thing in the living room, and they would argue, and then their friends would come over. And I went over there one time, and they had stitches. They got robbed and they got beat up and shit. And they told me they didn't have a gun. I go, what type of drug dealers don't have fucking guns? So I went and got them a fucking piece.
How nice of you.
Yeah, and then we became friends ever since. And then I started going over there. But you were asking me their existence. He still is in business. That was the conversation we had this night.
Yeah, how he could survive and not go to jail. Like how he could survive and make a living.
At this time right now, I talk to him once a month. Okay. And I know what type of action he does. I know how he does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how he moves. He's got kids and he's very careful.
Okay.
He's ultra careful. Even years ago, very careful. Oh. Very careful.
All right.
He controlled everything from A to Z. Do you follow me?
In his whole life or just like
this operation he had. He would pick up at a certain place an hour away from here because he had dealt with these guys for 20 fucking years. And he would get the specific brand of powder, Mexican dudes, fucking really good coke. And he would bring it back to some chick's house in the valley and he would chop it up. I think he would put it in a safe or something. I don't know exactly, but he would take it. He would never take it to his house in Hollywood. He had another apartment in Hollywood, or he had somewhere where he made pit stops. And he never really had the same car. He always had a bicycle. But the beauty about these guys are that Lee didn't understand was that his customer base is maybe 12 to 14 people. He doesn't go outside that customer base. He knows if something's up, if somebody comes to him with a weight problem. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know what that means.
So Lee Syatt is a comedian, and he makes pretty good money. And he always cops an 8-ball from me when he comes back on Sunday nights. He may cop another one on Tuesday. But if he's in town, he cops on Thursday and Friday and Saturday some nights. Lee's a good customer. What if Lee calls me one night and he goes, hey, can I come over to your house? I want to buy 2 ounces of coke. Right there, there's something going off. This guy never buys 2 ounces of coke.
Even though he's a good customer?
Good customer. All of a sudden, he hit the jackpot. No, I don't have it. And you hang up the fucking phone. And you disconnect your page. You lay low for a few days. You clean out your house. And you move on with your life for about a month.
Just from that one phone call. That's crazy.
That's what a professional does. I never did it. I wasn't a professional. But that's why he's been doing it for 16 years. You asked me, what does he make a year that night? I told you he probably makes $250,000 selling nothing bigger than eight balls. He's got such a strong contingent of Hollywood producers, directors, writers that want very much, what's that word called? They don't want, they want the...
They just want the coolness
of it? No. When I was in high school, there was a teacher I met, Mr. McGrath. And the reason why Mr. McGrath was delivering Coke was because it's better than a Spanish guy delivering Coke to your house.
Okay.
In those days, it wouldn't look good if a Colombian came over Lisa Ayad's house. So they'd have this guy come over as a white guy
to look nice.
My friend, that, you know, he looks nice. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he looks like some fucking vampy. He's always dressed to the nines. You know, he's always got a cover. He goes to acting class.
Right.
Every week. He books commercials from time to time. He's not a big time actor, but he's got that cover. He also has another fucking cover. But I know what he sells every night. He's got to be pushing an ounce now.
A night.
In eight chunks. Sometimes six chunks.
That seems like a lot, doesn't
sometimes
it?
Sometimes four chunks. Sometimes you'll sell 4/4 ounces to four people. Boom. You got an ounce sold. He always shuts down at 1. He used to shut down at 11. If you call him at a minute after 11, his phone's turned off. Me and him were so tight that I was allowed to go to his house, leave, and then he'd meet me somewhere. Do you know what I'm saying?
Why would you have to do that?
Because I would never leave with something in my pocket and leave him in there. So he was that good with me. So remember I showed you last week in Hollywood when we were at the light and I saw that computer store?
Right, yeah.
And I go, that's where I used to meet Dante. That was a 24-hour fucking...
Internet cafe.
A cafe. And we could, a computer cafe. So people would go in there all night and get on their computers. He would sit in there all night and be on the computer like a fucking nerd. And then you just go in there, and everybody thought he was a computer nerd. No, he was in there moving fucking blow.
See, that seems like how people would be like, why is someone coming in here? I'm seeing him every night. Was he there every night, or would he change?
He would sit there on the weekends. The owners knew him. Everybody knew him. Nobody said a word to him. He'd bring coffee. He'd bring donuts. And he'd sit in the back with earphones on. Sitting back with earphones on the computer. And then you came in, hey, what's going on? He'd shake your hand, the money was in your hand, and he put the money on the computer. You took the eight ball off the fucking computer. I give him fucking credit. Hey, listen, he beat the system. He figured out a way to beat the fucking system.
But the issue I have
he
with
put
it.
A, he put his kid through college.
Uh-huh.
He put his kid through fucking college.
That's amazing.
Like nothing happened. Like they live like in a nice, you know, like nobody knows nothing.
The thing that doesn't, that the why I still don't think, I don't even understand how it's possible still. I understand what you said. It's like you have these rules with yourself, like the no texting, whatever it is. And we always talk about how dumb people are sometimes. I don't trust... I think I would maybe trust you if I was going to sell coke to anyone. Like, if for some whatever reason I was a coke dealer, I think you would be the only person in my life who I would trust. I don't think I could trust anyone else. I can't find 12 people who I would trust. What if one night you get coked up and you want coke and you don't care that I'm closed at 11? Like, it's just...
No. But remember, you're going to have a bartender at the comedy store. You're going to have a musician at the whatever.
Okay.
You're going to have yourself a waitress at the Roxy. You're going to have a maitre d' at fucking Cafe Leo. You're going to have yourself these people. And you're going to get to know them. And you know, if you avoid the first 5 or 6 years, you're good. You're pretty fucking good, unless you're stupid. You go out every night, you drink, you have to blow on you. It's in the trunk of your car. You got a scale in your house. Then you go into different realms. The problem with that shit where he's succeeded is that he always sticks to his rules.
I don't think a lot of people do that.
The what?
I don't think a lot of people do that anymore.
Well, we had this conversation, you and I, last week on the phone. And it's called scheduling. And the same problem I'm having right now in my life is where you have to be him. I've been thinking a lot about him and how tight he runs his game and how he takes vacations. He doesn't have stuff in his house. You know, he has counter surveillance stuff. He has an attorney on call. I mean, he's a one-man store. Okay, he doesn't have an assistant. He doesn't have 10 guys around him with weapons and jumping up and down. There is nothing. If he walked in here right now, you think he worked with me in a movie, or you thought he was a fellow comedian, or whatever. He doesn't really, he drinks, but in his house. He gets fucked up, but in his house. He doesn't do powder at all. Does not do any powder at all.
Did he ever?
Nope. Nope, never did powder whatsoever. How fucking crazy is that? That's the one that always got me. If that thing was in my living room, I was doing it, Jack. But it, he doesn't do it. That it's these little rules. I don't have his home number. I have his main phone, but everything else is throwaway phones. He calls you from throwaway phones. He goes through 6 different numbers a month. But I call him on his main cell phone. On his main cell phone, there's no business talked. No, I got to see you. No. What time can you swing by? No, nothing. How you doing? What's going on? Do you have a spot tonight? Yeah, I may come by. Not really. I'm out of town. Blah, blah, blah. Love you. All right. Love you too. That's it.
Because he's worried about surveillance.
Right. So he'll call me. He would call me or see me and go, this is the number I'm going to be on until midnight. At midnight, the pumpkin fucking dies. And at midnight, that pumpkin died, Jack. When I first met him, he would go through phones once a week. New phone number. Bah, 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 bah.
Fuck.
And he'd make one run or two runs. He'd always have a woman with him.
And did he, like, the only thing I know is...
No fancy car. Doesn't even own a car.
How would he get all the phones? Because, like, in the wire, they had to send them down...
He cut a deal with somebody, and I asked him once, somebody brings him hot phones or something, 24-hour phones, brother. Bah, 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 bah. Or you go to 7-Eleven, I guess, or Radio Shack. I think it's 7-Eleven, right? You buy the 24-hour phones?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, those little fucking little Ali Kebab phones, whatever the dude who blew up the World Trade Center, whatever his name is.
So how would he, I don't think he wrote your number down, did he?
No. And if he does, I don't do blow. It's got nothing to do with me.
No, that's not what I meant. Like, if he was changing numbers all the time, how would you get into contact with him? Like, how would he remember people's numbers?
He had them all in his head.
No way.
And he'd call you and say, I'm going to be here for 3 days. You got that money you owe me? You know, he'd call you and say, can I see you? And I'd meet him, and I'd give him the money I owe him, and I'd take something else from him. And he'd disappear for 4 more days. I'm in awe of him. When we got into that conversation, I had just spoken to him like 3 days. When I go to Hollywood, like when I go to Hollywood Tuesday, I'll call him as I'm leaving the doctor's office because he's right around the corner.
Do you guys ever get together anymore and hang out?
No, I pull up in front of his house. I give him a big hug. He asks me how the baby's doing. I ask him how his kid is doing. He bitches because the kid goes to school out of state and it's killing him. So we complain about that, and that's where it ends. I tell him how much I love him, and I fucking drive off into the night. Every once in a while, I'll call him, and then, like, if you need ecstasy in Vegas,
right,
I can get you ecstasy in Vegas through him.
does he ever propose, like, hey, man, you need anything? Or no?
No. When I stopped doing coke, I didn't call him for like 2 months. Even though he called me. I didn't call him for like 2 months, maybe 3 months.
Okay.
And then one day he came to the store and he goes, what's going on? And I think I owed him like $600. I told him to take a ride with me. And we went over to the fucking ATM and I gave him the $400 I could take out. And I said, give me a few weeks, I'll give you the other two. And he asked me, what's going on? He had some new shit. If I needed it, he could swing it by. I go, no, I'm done. And we talked, and he goes, I'm really happy. He goes, one night you came over and you kind of scared me. And I remember the night I was fucked up. You know, when, I didn't like leaving the house when I did coke. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't like leaving the house. For me to leave the house, it has to be that I'm going crazy.
Why?
Because I'd be so paranoid and so fucked up towards the end. Those last couple of years. My friend died, Marilyn Martinez. But before Marilyn died, her husband, a year before Marilyn died, or 2 years, her husband got addicted to fucking Vicodins. Vicodins. Big time. Him, Bobby Lee, all those guys were going to San Diego and shit. But when he couldn't go to San Diego, he was broke. He would call me up. I had a friend in Houston that every time I went down there, he would give me a fucking jar of Vicodins. I didn't eat Vicodins. I had a bad experience. So I would bring them back and give them to him.
And so what, he would call you every time he didn't have money and ask for those buckets or whatever?
Yeah.
Pills are scary.
I didn't know what the point of that story was. I'm so fucking high. That chocolate from fucking Chiba Chew was. That's the second time. Last week, I was scared to drive home. I couldn't even stop at 7-Eleven fucking rolling papers that night. I had to go home. Thank God I found the rolling paper in my fucking, in my goddamn thing.
Oh, and I just wanted to mention one thing from what we were talking about earlier with the working high. It's the one I really wanted to talk about was how, like, it went from the point of me being scared and me being nervous about it. And now you get a note. You told me to stop because now when I get high, I get 8,000 terrible ideas. And I call you up and I start giving you ideas. So it's actually gotten to a place where you can actually work. It's actually like a helpful work tool. Like maybe 20,000 of them are terrible, but if one of them's good.
Well, the thing about marijuana use is that when you start it for, depending on how hard you go at first, it's just you're getting over your high. You're getting over your high for a long time. Like, you're like, I can't believe I'm fucking high. And that's like the first 2 or 3 or maybe 4 years.
Right.
And then one day, you know, I always did pot like everybody else, right? But then one day you realize, wait a second, I could smoke this and interact with people. And it becomes a complete different fucking game. I, myself, work 3 times harder when I smoke marijuana. That's me. Because I'm used to it. Today I had to do something. I said, let me take 5 minutes, go outside, get my head together. And that's exactly what I did. And I came back and I did 22 things at once. I put the videos up. I wrote. I emailed a friend. That works for me. You know, I'm happy it works for you. I'm happy that you're finally not scared anymore. You know, you were scared because of what your mom told you, what your friends told you, what everybody fucking told you. It's tough fucking living now, man.
I was thinking about it today. There's people who listen to this podcast, and myself included, who are like mad at you every day in our lives because like we'll be sitting and listening to people talk about this and that, and you will just like you can see through the bullshit in it because of all the stuff we talk about, and it's like it ruins like. For me, like, it ruins, like, watching football all day. I used to love watching football all day. Why can't I love watching football all day for my life and not know that I'm being a lazy piece of shit? Why can't I just sit there and eat wings and pizza and get to be 400 pounds?
I went through the same fucking thing, brother. No, man. Listen. You... I love your pieces. And you're learning a very valuable education. And you're learning an education that I never fucking learned... Because people mentioned it to me, and I saw people doing it. But I thought they were suckers. And I thought they didn't have their act together or anything like that. And I was completely wrong. Because all those people today are very successful. They own things. And they work themselves into something. They're not millionaires. They're not the Forbes top 20 millionaires. They don't have boats. They didn't want that. They just wanted comfort in their old age. So they would want for nothing when they were older and their two kids could get educated or their three kids. It's very expensive to put your kids through college.
It's getting worse and worse.
And the thing I learned the most was work ethic. Okay, a couple months ago, something happened that was very shocking to me. And I could see in your face it was wearing on you a little bit.
Okay.
And now you have to do this. You've been doing it all along. But now it seems like if you want to start this podcast business, you have a lot of dreams and aspirations, you have to do this. Paula was preparing for her GMAC, whatever the fuck it's called.
Bar.
And Paula knew the importance of this. She knew the importance of this bar and what it meant to her. And she had loans on the line and blah, blah, blah. And Paula basically for 8 weeks became a fucking refuge. And I could see it was wearing on you a couple weeks. You're like me. We're lonely people. We go home, and after an hour, we're like, well, should I jump out the window? And you were calling me, doing periscopes, eating stars. People hitting me up going, Joey's eating stars by himself. But we all learned a lesson, you know. And I never forget when she came back from Italy, I said to you, is she ready? And you looked at you like, I don't really know if Paula's ready. I don't know. If she knows that the vacation's over, becomes life. But guess what? She went out the next day and got a fucking job.
Yeah, she got the first job she interviewed for.
The first job she applied for.
Like the real first job she interviewed for when she got back.
She got the first fucking job. Yeah, so what I'm trying to tell you people is I learned something from that. I learned that maybe Paula will fail. I know she's going to pass because the hours she put into it. Normal people can't understand that. The third day when I call Paula and go, Paula, I'm making chicken cutlets with reefer, stars, Brad Pitt's here. And she's like, I can't do it because I got to study for my bar.
He would call me and be like, well, what are you guys going to do? And I'm like, nothing. I'm not seeing her. She's studying. It'd be like 8 o'clock at night. He'd be like, studying. Get over here.
You get a different respect for people because they stuck to their fucking guns. Something people don't do. And then they go one day, oh, I failed. I don't know why. The biggest lesson I want you to learn from this, Lee, is Timmy, my friend Timmy. God bless him. He's a truck driver. He works 5 days a week. That's a job he took. It's a great job. It's a union job. He gets paid well. He gets benefits. That's a job Timmy took. You took a job that you don't really know what this job qualifies.
Nope.
This job is perfectly, you come in 2 days, we smoke, we tape it. I leave, you cut it and put it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do whatever the fuck you want after that. Well, guess what? Those results were horrible.
Yeah.
You gained some weight. You fell in love. And you almost got caught up in the house. You couldn't get out the one day. You said you couldn't get out. You had ordered so much Chinese food and so much takeout. The sodium had you by the sides and shit. And you realized you had to do something else. And you started making calls in the morning. And when you're a freelance motherfucker, there's no days off, but there's no days off. And people don't understand that. And when you have to stick to that program, like there's always something to do. What we always talk about. There's always something to do. Don't tell me there's nothing. There's something to do. You know what? Get up, change the light bulbs. Put that one over there and put that one over there. There's something to do. That Led Zeppelin thing got dust on it. There's always something to do at a fucking job. I said to you, take the other perspective. We were always talking about an ad salesperson.
Right.
I said, start making calls. How much success did you have? Tremendous.
Zero.
No, you did great.
Oh, well, before.
Well, no. We had the fucking reefer with the pin. They didn't want to lift a rock. You had the fucking reefer people that with the license and the fucking app.
That's true.
Yeah, like, no. You started getting a couple, and now you realize that you come in here on Sundays sometime, you get some shit done, and you come in, and you know what? This has come now. This is a 6-day-a-week job for you.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? If you open up this fucking podcast business, sorry, Charlie. This is a 7-day-a-week job. And if there's a leak on Friday night and you're in the movies with Paula jumping up and down watching one of those bad movies, guess what? You got to show up at that fucking leak.
Oh, I know. It's, to be quite honest, I'm not tired, but like it's, like we were talking about, did I think if Paula was ready? This is more work, and it's just, it's the hours are weird. It's not that I don't enjoy it and love it and pushing through it, but this, it's a grind. It's at certain points.
The podcast. Like,
no, well, not just the podcast, but then driving down to meet to do podcasts in Pasadena or in Beverly Hills or something like that, or sending emails, and it's like you just said earlier today that you're busy. You said you've been busy for years, so you're getting busier. Like it's just getting. I'm at a different point of being busy, and I'm like still getting used to it.
Well, you're learning all the possibilities that we could do with the podcast.
Right, yeah.
So right now you're exploring a lot of them where I don't have the time to explore a lot of them. On the other situation, I'm just, and I got to tell you something, I'm just as busy as I am with stand-up as being a dad. I'm just as busy with the podcast as being a dad. You know, in a way, I don't have time for a social life. Our friend Feebles, the Cuban kid.
Right,
yeah. The guy that works in Burbank. Good friend of mine gave me a great Dick Van Dyke book. I'm going to see if I get Dick Van Dyke to sign it before he punches the fucking ticket. You know what I'm saying? Because just the book is that great. But he's, we were talking about foods the other night. You know, Dante Gazzini, same fucking thing. He'll hit me up and send me pictures of his Cuban food in Torrance that Feebles was talking about. And listen, you're in no danger. Unless we helicopter it down, that's 3 fucking hours to Torrance. It's an hour to Torrance and an hour fucking back from Torrance. It's not going to fucking happen.
Never in your life.
Now, why not, Joey? I tell you why not. I don't have the goddamn time. I wish I did. And if I go down and the bread is bad, I'm going to throw the fucking plate at your goddamn head. So forget about this whole fucking thing. It's not going to work out for you. You know, it's amazing where the time has gone. When I go home, my friend George, you don't want to eat at Chan's. You want to eat at this Chinese place. Yeah, it's an hour away, George. I don't have that fucking convenience. I got to be in New York City at 7 fucking o'clock. That means you're going to drop me off on the fucking ferry? So, respect your time, man. If you're a nice schedule, great. Guys, I'm a fucking great scheduler. I schedule shit. You know, I have a friend, Shane. This is where I live. You know Mitch Hedberg? Mitch Hedberg was a great writer.
Right.
And a great performer. You know why? Because Mitch shut his phone off from 8 to 12.
Every day.
Every fucking day.
That seems like a good thing to do.
I shut my phone off in the morning. When I get back from Mercy, I turn that motherfucker off. Right after the Periscope, that phone gets shut off. Till 1 o'clock. The agent knows how to get a hold of me. That's it. Who needs to know? Who else? My wife knows how to get a hold of me. That's it. Why? I was wasting too much time for years fucking around because every time you get involved in something, the phone rings.
All the time.
All the fucking time. And the phone rings 8 times in a row, so nothing even starts. Is that when I go to shut the phone off, there's one line on the fucking page. And I'm sitting there going, Jesus Christ, what happened to the fucking hour and a half? I'm sitting here at Marie E.T. You know how many times I went to Marie E.T.? Sometimes I go to Marie E.T. and I do great. Sometimes I go to Marie E.T. and I don't do dick. Those are the times I bring the phone to drink coffee with me. So I got a fucking idea. I ain't bringing the fucking coffee over there. I ain't fucking bringing the phone out of the car no more. I put it in the trunk with some ice on top to cool it off in a bag. I swear to God, you didn't know that?
No, you put it in so it doesn't overheat?
Yeah, it doesn't overheat because it gets really hot in that fucking parking lot. Let me do some shout-outs, and we'll get the fuck out of here, Lisa. Yeah. Interesting shit tonight. No, I couldn't believe how pissed off people got at me about the CM Punk thing. And all I saw it as was his balls. I want to apologize for my man Sabatino not calling in tonight. Somewhere along the line, he got sticker shock. I got to be honest with you guys. This is the fourth time I've tried to get somebody from that area to call in, and they won't call it.
And then didn't we have someone who...
Carlos Perez.
Yeah.
I think another friend of mine, I don't want to say his name, and a girl. That area down there where I grew up, when my mother died, given that terrorist down there, 38th Street, Charles Court, all those kids have a certain... it was weird. I took Lee up there. I go, Lee, put the camera down. And right when we got to Charles Court, some guy said, put that fucking camera down. I was like, Lee, I told you. These three blocks here were programmed anti-camera. Anti-fucking camera. But I'm really surprised that Carmine let them tape us.
Really?
The documentary. It's really surprising to me, especially with that area, especially what he taught us and how he worked. I don't know. I text Sabatino. You text him and... nothing happened, so I don't know what happened, so I'm sorry to the viewers. This would have been a really good interview. We spoke twice today. We spoke about what we're going to talk about, the state of mind of what I got from down there, growing up down there. I think a lot of my shit is from down there. It really is, because there was a lot of old-timers down there that lived on those side streets, and we would always talk to them, and they would express their views, and I would laugh my fucking ass off. There was one guy, Otino, that was the most racist guy in the fucking world. Right in front of me, so I didn't mind.
And they were, like, homeless?
Nah, he owned one of the houses. He was an Italian guy. Him and his wife were sitting on the balcony and just watched people going up and down the block and then tell people about everybody's gossip.
Jesus Christ.
But when he'd see me, he'd go, look at the Syats over there, fucking heaps. Look at them bringing in fucking bagel and lox. You think they come over here and invite me for bagel and lox? Fuck no, because I'm a Catholic. They don't want me. Look at the other people up the block, the Altmans. Look at them.
I used to love living in the North End in Boston because, like, they would bring, like, I literally had neighbors who would bring their, like, living room ottomans, like big rocking chair things, down to the street and just sit there shirtless all day talking.
Talking. That's it. But they're watching, and he would just sit there with his fucking wife and just watch and complain. And then as I was walking up the street with the basketball, he would unload on me, like, you're Spanish. You're never going to be a professional basketball player. You got a better chance of being a fucking waiter. You and the rest of those spickaroos in there. And I wouldn't get mad at him. I would giggle and call him a guinea fuck. And that was the end of that.
Spickaroo.
Let me do some shout outs. My condolences to Jason Monteiro and his wife. My heart goes out to your family. Doyle Chandler, Jason Pollock, Lloyd, Charles Sample, Stelio Contras, El Parco Jr., Meg, and Lizilly Love. I also want to talk about this. I'm trying to get Lee one of these. They sent me, because the first they said, yeah, we're going to give you two fucking beds. And they go, no, you got to do one for 30 days and give us your sample. And then, so I don't know how this fucking thing works. I recently moved, and one of our sponsors, I read great things about their product, and I offered to do like a sample run or whatever, and they sent me a mattress. And I don't know what the fuck happened. It came in a box, Lee. And I looked at this thing and I'm like, we're getting fucking beat. This is too small. And this turned out to be one of the best mattresses I ever had. As soon as I go over to my wife's side, I can feel the difference. My wife got the cold bed, which stays cool. You know, a couple of days ago, I went on their website and I watched what you needed to do to get a bed from them. And it really is unbelievable how far we've gone in technology now for a bed. For 3,000 fucking years, everybody slept on a cover with little skinny pines and vines under it and shit. It's a complete different situation. You know, you're unique. You don't walk like everybody else. You don't talk like everyone. You don't sleep like everyone. So why is your mattress one size fits all? I didn't know about this for years, but I got to tell you something. With Helix Sleep, all that stuff goes away because it's a custom mattress, and you thought it was going to cost you $5,000 to $10,000, right? Not until now. What I'm going to bring you is Helix Sleep, where you can buy mattresses online, customized for hundreds of dollars instead of thousands. What you do is you go to helixsleep.com and you answer some simple questions based on four key preferences: your weight, your height, you know, what side of the bed does your wife sleep, what side of the bed you sleep on, stuff like that. They'll do a custom sleep profile. They'll build you the most comfortable mattress you'll ever sleep on. Your mattress will arrive at your door in about a week, all right? And shipping is 100% free. For couples, Helix customizes each side of the mattress, one for my wife, one for me. Helix customers report 30% improvement in overall sleep quality. You have 100 nights to try it out, and if you don't love it, all right, love it, like me, they'll pick it up for free and give you 100% refund. No questions asked. That's why everyone from GQ Magazine to Forbes, they're all talking about Helix Sleep. So do me a favor. You know I don't blow smoke up your ass. It's a great deal. It's a phenomenal mattress. You can customize. Let's say your kid wants to sleep in the middle. They get dick. They get the fucking middle. That's the way it's been for 2,000 years. It's a great bed. It's comfortable. And you know what? It's cheap and affordable. Do me a favor. Go to helixsleep.com/Joey. Again, helixsleep.com/Joey and get $50 off your order. That's helixsleep.com/Joey. helixsleep.com/Joey. 30% improvement in overall sleep, and I'm going to give you $50 off your order. Not to mention, you got 100 nights to try it out. And if you don't love it, we'll pick it up 100% refund, all right? No questions asked. Again, just go to helixsleep.com and take a peek. You're going to love it. If you like some, go to helixsleep.com/Joey and get $50 off your first order. How's that one for you? Also, I want to salute my people on it. They have a thing, these mixed greens.
I've heard about that. Where is
guys,
that?
Go on there right now and try it. I've been farting good. I've been going to the bathroom good. My stomach feels better. My skin feels better, except for this fucking zit on my nose. Everything's fucking beautiful. And you know what? From the Shroom Tech Sport to the Shroom Tech Immune, I'm out of the protein shake again. I got to order more. I ain't going to blow smoke up your ass. I use this stuff, guys, and it works tremendously. Do me a favor. Go to honor.com right now, /Joey.
No. Church.
/church. And look at their website. Look at the minerals. Look at the vitamins. See if anything works out for you and it suits your lifestyle. Whether you're a hiker, a jiu-jitsu guy, a weightlifter, a kettlebell lifter, whatever the fuck you do, Honor has something for you to optimize your workout and your life on a real level. Do me a favor. Go to honor.com right now. If there's something you like, go to the box when you're checking out and press in.
Church.
And get 10% off, and it gets delivered right to your door. Again, I'd like to thank Helix Sleep, and I'd like to thank honor.com for supporting the podcast. I'd like to thank you guys for listening. Sorry that the fucking mook pooped out on you motherfuckers, but Wednesday we got a great guest, and guess what? Thursday, me and Lee Austin, motherfucking Texas, at the Cap City Comedy Club. Go there tonight because tickets are going fast. I don't know what it is about this time of the year. Tickets move. These clubs are small. Number two, the following week, I'm at Gotham in New York City. Again, I hear the first show's already sold out. So,
oh, shit.
That's what I heard from a buddy of mine. Called me from New York. He wants a table of eight. So there you go, people. I'm trying to bail you out. I'll see you motherfuckers Wednesday night. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for the love. I'm giving you my fucking heart and what I feel. All right, cocksuckers. I want to thank Lee Syatt, my number one fucking Doom Coon, my number one. I love him to death.
Thank you, buddy. I love you, man. I can't wait to see everybody in Austin. Right, everybody always asks.
Let's do this shit. Do this shit.
This show was brought to you by Helix Sleep. At Helix Sleep, they make custom unique mattresses for a fraction of what you would normally pay. When you go to helixsleep.com/Joey, they're going to give you $50 off of that already lower price. That's right. helixsleep.com/Joey to get $50 off Helix Sleep's already low prices. This show was also brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10% on all of their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, and Shroom Tech Sport.